Hello and a welcome to The Dive, season 6, episode number 2, baby.
2.
I am here, so this is the first real season. How about that?
So this is episode 1 with Kobe.
Yeah.
Episode 1A.
Oh yeah, which is A, which is B. Freak is B. Even though it came first.
Well, the other one, it is BK, before Kobe.
It's like it's like when authors like release their sequel or like the prequel after they put out the first one. You know, it's like it's like this is
the prequel. This is the real episode.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
There's exactly. just something with the time continuum. You know, got messed up on the dive. But this
you could
week,
skip it. Honestly, it's not canon. Last week's wasn't canon. You could go right from the holiday episode to this one and not really.
But you're only allowed to skip last week because you've already watched it. Presumably, if you haven't watched it, you're not allowed to skip it.
Because there wasn't like a lot of new content between the holiday episode and that episode. So
it was a filler
That's
arc.
True.
It was absolutely a filler arc.
Kobe only comes in for the real juicy episodes.
Yeah, he big time just
he
last
get
week.
Out
he was
of
like,
bed.
"What are you going to talk about? No, this is dumb. I'm not coming.
This is a filler episode. This is like they're going to the beach.
You know what? Send Freak in there. Yeah. Go ahead, take care of
that. Give him a rep. Why not?
All right, this week, The Dive is presented by Caffeine.
Mm. Great sponsor, because we need a lot of it.
Exactly. All right, thank you guys. Also, speaking of last week's episode, thanks to all the fans. So many people tuned in last week, and we got so many comments, people being excited that The Dive is back. We're happy to be back. Happy Kobe's back here as well. We talked about this a little bit last week and you missed out, so I don't know if you want to reminisce a little bit, but it felt crazy to me that I was like, oh my God, this is our 6th year of The Dive.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've been having that since it was also this year's league, you know,
LCS 10
years for LCS as well. So I've had a lot of, you know, old memories popping back up, living the good times over once again. You know, we've been doing this for so long, actually. It's crazy that we now have, and we talked about this on, you know, first day of lock-in, but Evil Geniuses are fielding a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old, and a 19-year-old. The 17-year-old, born in 2004, speaking of how long we've been doing this.
Why is it that the
it's crazy.
Birth dates make it seem way crazier than just hearing the number? I don't know, but there's something about that.
Yeah, because
really?
There have always been
to
young...
Me, yeah.
It's because there have always been, you know, young people, you know, 17 or whatever. And so you're like, oh, yeah, you know, whatever numbers. There are always just people of different ages. But when you tack that onto an actual time that you have specific memories from, I think that's when it really comes into context.
For me, post 2000 is all the same at that point. Like, you're a baby.
You're a zoomer.
Yeah. Like, before 2000 and then, like, right the first couple times that I heard about people being born, like, on 2000 that like I was like interacting with as a human, I was like, oh my God, like you didn't see The Matrix when it came out. Like that blew everyone's mind. That was like a cultural touchstone that you did not experience. And like, that is a disconnect we will never surmount between each other. You know, like now that
can never
like,
be friends with you.
Yeah. Like it's just not going to work. It's just not going to work. Okay?
They're different species now.
This is the most like dad opinion ever.
Well, I'm just saying that like that
you
was,
didn't see Dirty Dancing when it came out.
I'm just saying like that to me is a bigger moment.
Oh,
like
when
you have a cultural, like a disconnect age-wise, then like, oh, 2003 versus 2004 versus 2007. I really don't care anymore. I get it. I'm old. Like, yeah, 3 or 4 years different versus, you know.
I'm not old. I'm a Peter Pan.
You're
I'm
the
never
oldest
growing
here.
Up.
You're the oldest.
I'm not jumping in your bucket though.
Get in here, dude. I got 2 years beneath
I don't like where Mark is going.
No, neither do I. Mark is a dad.
We're
those hip uncles.
Guys, it's over. Get over. Just join me already.
Never. Never.
Get in here. Accept
it. I'm playing games all day forever. All right. Well, thanks everyone for all the comments and everything last week. Remember, send us your questions, and especially if you want to send us voice questions, send us to them on anchor.fm. We haven't been getting as many of those. Appreciate all the Twitter questions you guys submitted when Kobe and I tweeted at the same time. We were in sync.
Yeah, I like that. I know exactly what happened to you. We both opened up the document at the exact same time, and first line at the top is, oh, you know, we got a ton of support for the first episode,
we
but not
some questions.
Not so many questions.
We can solve this.
I really have liked, too, the anchor ones where you guys leave voicemails. So I think definitely hit that up.
Because no one leaves me voicemails except for, you know, like those like automated bot calls. So it's like I have real voicemails. You know?
Yeah. See, yeah. I am also younger as well as. never mind.
I didn't know where you were going. I was ready to support you, but.
Yeah, I decided I didn't want to actually continue with the Mark attack. So let's get right back
Mark,
out there.
Hotline League. Giloto jumped in there and Revenge, I guess, was asking him who tilts the ghost the most.
Yeah, it was really funny. He came on. They have a great banter back and forth. They always are flaming each other. And at some point, you know, there was like, who's the new Revenge? Like, who's the person that's getting flamed all the time in VOD reviews and stuff? And Gilhota said that there actually really isn't one because they're all veterans. And so working with veterans, you can both be like more critical, but then they also adapt faster. So you don't spend as long on the criticism, I guess.
That's weird they already... Actually, no, yeah.
Was this post their weekend or
pre? Yeah, this was weekend? On. This was just 2 days ago.
Okay. So no one's getting flamed after the 03.
On Immortals?
Yeah.
Well, he's on Team Liquid now. So he was, you know, yeah. You could have flamed.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I was talking because of Revenge.
Oh, well, Revenge probably got flamed. I thought you were saying their VOD reviews. No. He was asking Gilhota about Team Liquid. Okay. Yeah, on the new team.
I was going to, that's why I was going to be like, well, does he already consider Ayla and Jan like veterans? Because.
Definitely
in the mist. So that's why I was like, that's interesting that he...
Well, to be fair, Ayla probably did have more competitive experience because he actually played in OPL a lot. So yes, in that sense, probably. And I don't think he was really talking about Jan when he was... You know, they're talking more about the starters.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. But how do you know he's not starting? What if Cordae...
Well, that's what they're figuring out right now.
I was also just like, man, Ayla could just start. He looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, it gets really weird, though. If he can't get a green card, that becomes a really difficult situation because for now, it's just like, they're just, you know, rotating back and forth, happy, happy. But if TL can't get a green card for him, at a certain point, you're deciding between benching Hansama or Core JJ.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like, those are two huge stars. Core JJ, I would assume they would choose because... He's been like the face of the team, right? But then you just imported Hansama to put on your academy team. Like, that's brutal too. Both of them would be brutal. So hopefully they can get it all solved because that would suck for TL.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks already in my opinion. And those are not simple problems to, you know, you figure out. So
yeah,
all you can do is kind of cross your fingers for them now.
Green card's going to take forever.
Yeah, green card issue. I saw some people talking about this on Reddit about like, calling it an issue kind of understates that this is not like a slight hiccup. Either way, sometimes you're like, it's a visa issue. It just needs to get sorted. Like green cards, like you said, it can just go on. It
took me years and years to get one, right? But I mean, it depends where you are in the process. If you're at the very end and it's like, your like final appointment got pushed back or something, mm-hmm. then that could be an issue. And then you have to have your final interview and then you're approved or whatever. But obviously, you know, if it's not something like that, that stuff can take forever because it's a pretty, pretty complicated process for sure.
Yeah. I mean, right now, though, Ayla has looked fantastic. The two Thresh games, he looks like a stud on that. I think people need to start taking it away. I feel like at least if you're a TL fan, that's the positive spin. Like, okay, maybe Core JJ might not start, but Hans and Ayla have looked really good together. So
that's kind of the two that I was leaning towards for them to start. Mm-hmm. But...
Core does so much for the team, though.
Especially and what I'm thinking is maybe he can still do a lot of that even if he's not starting, you know? He's like the real, he's also another coach for the team. You definitely miss the in-game leadership, obviously.
Yeah.
Which is going to be huge. But yeah, I kind of had been leaning towards like Ayla was looking really good. Then you have to take into consideration these are very small sample sizes too.
Yeah,
obviously Team Liquid's doing their own internal stuff. So
and like to what Mark said, you know, the Thresh looked amazing, but we've seen a lot of times where like a rookie will come in or someone who's he's not a rookie, but you know what I mean. Someone who's not as known in the LCS scene comes into LCS, has their first games in LCS, they play their thing, and they're set up for success with their guy, and they look really good, and then it's taken away, and it's like, ooh.
Try your Yumi now. It's like, never mind. Because
Core JJ has looked good.
I don't know about that example.
Well, I'm just saying something else. Yeah.
But, you know, Core JJ has looked good across all kinds of metas, you know, from Engage to you know, Enchanter to, like, Pantheon roaming at Worlds and, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. So big shoes to fill for sure if they have to do that. But, you know, speaking of teams that didn't do as well, Vitality... They put up a donut for week one here, 0-3 for the super team.
Yeah.
Losing to Excel as well.
It was a cool donut, though. It was like a confetti donut with like lots of sprinkles and like a lot of flavors. And yeah, it was fun to watch.
Not for them.
Well, I'm not. I don't care about them.
It was fun for me to watch because I also, you know, wanted to enjoy and laugh at the situation, right? It's this, they literally have, you know, their promo video is like all them as these colossus giants, you know, stomping over everything. And they're really leaning into super team and, you know, trashing everyone.
Yeah, watch
and
us.
Spending all of the money. And it also had the added layer that a lot of, I'm sure, you know, North American fans watching of like, oh, these are the players that left, you know, and they're going back to Europe, to see the flop over there, you know, after immediately after playing at LCS was another kind of haha. But it wasn't like, oh my God, they just look terrible and this is never going to work out type of thing. So I definitely agree with Mark. It was super enjoyable to watch. I don't think it's going to be, you know, complete disaster for them moving forward.
I had a lot of fun watching it, but for like the sick satisfaction point of view as well, right?
Oh yeah, we're all salty. We're all bitter. Like, have fun back in Europe.
I mean, for me, I just think it's fun to see teams that are expected to dominate flop. I just kind of enjoy that. No matter what league it's in, I think it's
any expectation that is subverted, I think, is always going to be fun and exciting, right? Exactly. Whether it is a top team failing or a bottom team overcoming.
I agree completely, and I do think that like the social campaign made it a bit more funny, right? Like, we're the Giants, watch us, follow us, you know, their whole slogan and everything. So it was funny. I mean, I think clearly they have very good individuals. I will say they looked like a really poor team, at least in week one. They did not work well together, and that's something I think we saw across, you know, a number of regions with a number of teams. Even if they had good pieces, not every team came looking good out of the gates because they were having coordination issues. And I think you know, that's something that Vitality should bounce back from. But if you have a really bad second week, then I think you start kind of getting worried that stuff can implode. So week two is going to be key for them.
And I think for super teams, like you said, the talent's never the issue, or rarely the issue, and it's about team cohesion. Yeah. And like what made that G2 super team so good in 2018, 2019 was like, they all saw the game the same way, they were crazy, all that kind of stuff. Whereas like this super team, it's the first time it's together, their personalities just might not work, they might see the game different ways, and like it could be an implosion. It could be. I don't think so based off week one. I'm ready to like call it like, oh, this is a flop. But I don't know. You know, like you said, you lose 2 weeks in a row. You
if they start go 0-2 in week two, then I'll be ready to call
it. They start turning on each other like, you suck, and, you know, just never recover.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something that's kind of following where these players came from, you know, self-made. You know, there was definitely a lot of internal stuff going on in Fnatic, and the viewpoints on the game came out from multiple perspectives that was one of the big issues. Same thing for Perks with Cloud9.
Alfari as well. And
same thing for Alfari. So it's not like, oh, where did these synergy problems come from? It's interesting that they're putting together a super team, knowing that they've got star players, all coming from different teams with, and there's no clarity on those issues because you don't have, you know, inside info or magnifying glass, but those types of things are already circling, and then you put them all together and you're like, problem solved. The reason is that each of them on all these separate teams had the same issue, and they all really, you know, saw the game the same way and want to play the exact same way.
I mean, you just hope they keep flopping, so that way, like, people start asking their teammates, like, what went wrong before? Could you have seen this coming? And then Fudge is like, oh, well, Perks always did this, and, you know, Jat's like, the problem with Alfari. You get all the drama, like, once it flops. Because you always get the blow-up if a super team fails. Yeah. That's the best part.
It's interesting, because definitely in Europe, it's not common for teams to be put together in this way. Like, you know, star players will be added to an already good roster, but this was just, like, buy up all the expensive players from all the different places and put them together. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm sure there's other examples that I can't think of right now, but Alliance is the last one that comes to mind. And that was a long time ago. This just hasn't been the trend. There's been like steal the star from a team. G2's done that a bunch of times, you know, taking caps. But that's not, to me, like building a super team. Yeah. Like, your team was already good and you added someone. It feels a little bit different.
Yeah. Definitely.
So it's definitely interesting to see the experiment happen. But on to Lock-In.
Yes, sir.
Lock-In prize pool. A lot of people haven't really been talking about this, but it's 150K first place prize. Yep. And I have a little bit of a pet peeve with people saying, well, Lock-In doesn't mean anything. $150,000 is a lot of money. And yes, there are some players in the league that are making, you know, enormous amounts of money, but the LCS minimum salary is 70K, right? If you're a player that is making around that, you can potentially make nearly half your yearly salary just by winning, right? It's split five ways. And my understanding is generally that the prize pool is not really going at all to orgs. It's not really going at all to coaches. Coaches usually have bonuses and things built in where if their team, you know, wins something or whatever, they just get extra money. That's how a lot of that stuff is structured. Like, that's a big deal. This is more than many esports play for at, like, premier tournaments. And this is just an opening event tournament, right? And so for people to say like, that's not worth trying for, to me is like so bullshit. And I hate that attitude. If you're a competitor, you should be trying to win. I have no problem with people, you know, wanting to experiment with rosters and things like that. But if you're not giving it your all, no matter what lineup you're putting in, then you're just doing it wrong as a competitor. You're wasting valuable practice time, and you're not getting yourself an accurate idea of how good or how bad your team is and what you truly need to work on.
Yeah, I would think that everyone that is in is definitely, you know, giving it their all, because, you know, even if you're the academy players or you know, whatever team you are actually fielding, they're for sure trying to make good impressions, trying to show that they're good, trying to win the money as well. Yeah, you know, how much money you actually end up with also depends on your contract. Some of them have specific individual ones. But I would say one of the things that people are latching onto with this tournament, as far as the teams that are running, you know, academy rosters or tons of those players, that those are because they literally can't get their starter players here. It wasn't like, let's just blow off this tournament.
Yeah.
For a lot of them, I know some
it's
of them.
Not like stay
some
in
of them
Korea
were. Some of them were a little. Some of them were a little bit clouded because there were some things that were coming out where, like, oh, you know, X team would rather have their main players training, you know, in China or in Korea during this time. But after that got kind of worked through, the actual issues are not being able to have the players here with, you know, green card or you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's mostly a community perception, I think, more than the players to that point. Like, oh, well, like, why should we care, some of them are saying. But $150,000 is pretty dope to, like, give out, like you're saying. And I think watching players make their mark, like all the TSM Academy guys taking down FlyQuest was a huge deal. And you get to see, like, people pop off. XU looks pretty good for someone who's never played Academy before. He came straight from amateur into the pro scene. Like, there's a lot of individual player storylines. You're still seeing TL, like 80% there, TL, only missing Core JJ, really, depending on the lineup they're running. EG is all there. 100 Thieves is all there. And so, like, you are still also getting some increases in, like, or getting the first look at some of these teams.
Yeah. I mean, all that being said, I'm kind of sad because last year Lock-in was super sick when we had it, you know, the first one, and it was all hyped up, who's going to win, and there was really – you know, heated discussions, and it does kind of suck that we don't have the actual starting rosters. But
yeah, I agree. I mean, but it's tough, right? Because my understanding is a lot of these things have been made more difficult by the huge spike in COVID cases, that it's harder for people to get visas, and that has really complicated and slowed down the process. And that's just the reality. You know, I think people would love to see every starting roster really battle it out. But I've got to say, I've actually really enjoyed it still overall, because a lot of the teams that were kind of written off have been more surprising, right? You know, TSM Academy taking down FlyQuest, and then you're like, oh, well, maybe FlyQuest just sucks. Well, guess what? FlyQuest beat 100 Thieves, who was looking so dominant in that group. I've really enjoyed watching Fudge play mid. Jojo Pion has been really funny on Twitter and stuff, if you guys haven't followed him. Like, he is talking so much trash, like, we're not gonna drop a game in this, like, you know, they play Bjergsen and he's like, this is your NA GOAT, like, who is this guy? You know, like, it has been really fun seeing the players that have really been going after it. And to your guys' point, I didn't want to say that the pros are putting on that they're not trying. Just, I've been getting so many tweets and so many questions of like, like, why should people even bother with lock-in? To me, it's like, there's a lot of reasons to bother.
It's funny that two of your examples were players that, you know, are supposed to be, you know, playing regardless. Fudge was always going to be in there, and JoJo. But I also do like, you know, always looking at the situations like this, you know, as opportunities. And it's a huge opportunity for a lot of the Academy, you know, players getting a lot of exposure and being able to show, you know, what they have. On that, in that similar vein too, like, I was, you know, things like, you know, CLG with the completely blown up roster and having all the Academy players in there in their first game, you know, creating a lot of hype, getting the win and stuff. Yeah, kind of trailed off later on, but we'll get deeper into the lock-in.
What's your guys' take on JoJo Pion then? Because obviously there was a huge amount of hype coming into lock-in, you know, a lot from the EG camp, but also from other places too. And I've been really excited. He played against Bjergsen, Power of Evil, and Palafox. So, you know, as far as the first three for him to play, pretty stiff competition.
I mean, in terms of the LCS mid lane pool this year, we've talked about how it's not that dominant, and that's two of the three big ones. The only one he's really missing is Abadaga. And so, you know, pretty incredible for his first two games on the LCS stage. Looks good. I haven't seen, like, he's not the best mid laner in NA. Like, I don't think I was going to go out and claim that, but he hasn't been taken advantage of, really. His laning phases were fine. He was really aggressive. You could argue he made the game-winning play in a tight Team Liquid game with that package in on top of Bjergsen.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like, that's everything we were hoping for when people were like, JoJo Pune's coming, and the people were, well, is his laning actually going to be able to hold up? Yes. Is he still going to be aggressive? Yes. Like, this is everything you wanted for a 17-year-old kid.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're getting everything you wanted from the entire team, from EG as a whole. So it's, they're looking like one of the most scary, if not the most scary team.
Maybe Impact. I will say, I think Impact had a roughie on Gnar.
What's funny is, yeah,
he's just airballing like every Gnarl.
I think a lot of people though are like, it's just old man Impact. You know, that we could always rely on Grandpa.
Oh, Grandpa.
In the top line. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, Grandpa Impact.
You see the tweet he put out like with the sled attached to the four members.
All the Zoomers are pulling him along. Yeah. His Grandpa Impact in the back.
Yeah,
that was really funny. But he, to be fair, he had a really bad game. He usually does step it up when the big games come on. Mm-hmm. And I would say, as far as JoJo, for me, you know, I'm really happy with his performance given all the context. But I will say, if I'm just looking at a game by game basis and just kind of analyzing a game, I actually thought he didn't have a good game against TL. Yes, he kind of had that cool moment, mm-hmm. but he also fell flat on his face a number of times in that game. Like, he had some bad packages and some bad positioning. There was a few times where he kind of like tunnel visioned, I think, on trying to kill a carry and like walked into other carries and died. And even just like DPM is not the stat, but
well,
like
especially for Corki.
But like, he did very low damage. He got significantly outdamaged by Danny that game, who was playing Jinx, when he's playing poke Corki build, right? Like, mm-hmm. I just don't think he had a good game against TL. Obviously it wasn't egregious or anything. He still had some good moments and they won the game.
Yeah.
But you know, he was not dominant. So yeah, I'm definitely not ready to like crown him like, you're the best. But
I don't think that you should. You know, no. It would be a crazy world we're living in if you're ready to crown this 17-year-old Fortnite, you know, transfer basically as the best mid laner in the league already on day one.
You know who I am maybe ready to crown though as one of the best bot lanes is Danny and Vulcan. Because they were looking damn good. And Vulcan was on fire.
Vulcan was for sure killing it. That's why I'm saying it's a lot of EG hype, EG as a whole team.
Yeah.
Kind of going here. And so I do think, because we're focused really, you know, heavily on JoJo, since, you know, that's the new, you know, promotion here and the youngest player. I do think it is, you know, helped a lot by the success of the entire team.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's a really good spot as far as you talking about the hype coming in for him to be starting at, you know, beginning of lock-in tournament. Looks like this team is definitely as advertised.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about Inspired.
He was great.
He was incredible. Like, not super overstated, but like seemingly always doing the right thing. Like, I thought he had an incredible weekend overall. Vulcan, maybe he was the MVP with like some more standout plays. We'll see.
Maybe.
But I think maybe game one, I would have given more to Inspired. I probably would have voted Inspired. Game two and three, I would have voted Vulcan.
Yeah. Sure. But like, even to the Impact point, yeah, the TL game wasn't great. But then the CLG game afterwards, he crapped on them. Like, yep. he got super fed on as Gwen, I think it was, and it was just like, oh, he got 7 kills out of nowhere. Like, okay, yeah. He's almost solo killing in lane and stuff. I think he did get a solo kill. Like, the whole team is probably gonna have a little bit of volatility, but all five look like they're actually playing well.
Inspired, I thought he was really on point, especially on the Zen. I can't remember what game it was, but maybe it was against TL where they're playing against Sion. Yeah. But he just had the buffered Zen ult, which I haven't really seen people do in competitive, where he was timing his Zen ult every single time. So he'd walk into the Sion ult and then he'd buffer it like the split second before he's going to get hit. So when he's not unstoppable, because there's a cast time on your knockback. So he would get hit, the unstoppable goes away from Sion, and he's instantly knocked back and the engage is just dead. And yeah, you have to trade your ult to do it, but he consistently did that. You know, maybe you can speak to how good the timing window is on that bit. Like, I haven't played as much Zen, but I just hadn't seen that in competitive, and he did it every time. I'm just like, well, good mechanics, check. Good brain, check. Yeah. Like, that was just good stuff.
I think the Sion one is kind of decently difficult. One that I've really enjoyed from Solo Queue right now also that we'll probably see in pro play is doing that on Diana, because the Diana engages will, you know, one-shot basically your backline. So it's really important. You can get the ult when she jumps in and knock her back out. So the second half, because the second half that does the damage of Diana's ultimate is delayed. And so a lot of times you can knock her right back out.
So looked it up quickly. Xin Zhao's cast time on his ult is 0.35 seconds.
Yeah.
And they're not in studio. So most of their TR pings, as I understand it, for local people is around 18 milliseconds, 0.8, you know, so like 0.18, excuse me. So that's pretty quick. Like, yeah, you have to be pretty on point to know when you're going to get hit.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it on live, so
yeah,
yeah.
Possible. Oh, okay. And I'm really old. Yeah, as we started out the show.
Cool story. Cool story, Kobe.
He's basically dead, Mark. still.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, it's not the easiest mechanic in the world.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And it is one of those ones that you have to be confident, because if you are late, you just get stunned. You take the full damage from the Scion Hall, and you probably just die.
Yeah, I mean, so you look telegraphed. You see it coming. So as long as you're used to knowing when you have to press it, it's more prediction than reaction, honestly.
But yeah.
How are you guys feeling about FlyQuest? Because obviously they started off with a really rough start, losing to the Academy's team. You can give credit to TSM Academy, but you could also say, oh, you could be on the negative side and say, oh God, that's embarrassing. You know, you lost to the Academy team. I saw a lot of kind of like hot takes or big reactions immediately after that game where mm-hmm. like FlyQuest is going winless in the LCS, and you know, like some really strong ones, but they had the big bounce back. Obviously they beat 100 Thieves. You can chip away at that a bit by saying, ah, well, it was Tenacity, it wasn't Someday, so like maybe it's not the full A team or whatever. But I thought that game wasn't just like 100 Thieves having a bad game. I thought that was FlyQuest actually playing really well. They played the 1-4 very intelligently, utilized Kumo on the Gwen really, really well to be able to create pressure, take objectives on the other side of the map. I thought Tokui, like, he had some good moments and bad moments, but like mm-hmm. overall, he was pretty fun to watch throughout the weekend. I'm like cautiously optimistic about FlyQuest.
I don't know where to land, honestly. I don't know.
I feel better than previously. So a lot of judging, you know, these teams for me is, this is basically immediately judging what you did in your off season.
Yep.
Because this is our first litmus test right after all these crazy changes. And so teams like FlyQuest and CLG, I'm judging with the context of, these were trash. These were actually just so terrible from last year. You kind of want to wipe it from your memory. And so this is a breath of fresh air for me. I was a little bit worried, like a lot of people, after the first game versus TSM Academy.
Yep.
And I was kind of ready because of last year to be able to kind of wash them under and be like, ah, well, still dog doo-doo, right? But not the case. They fought back through it. To your point also, I was definitely one of the ones that was like very skeptical, even when everyone's telling me, yeah, you know, he's so good at lane and stuff. I became a bit more of a believer, not on the train of like, oh yeah, he's going to be best mage player or whatever, but I do think this FlyQuest iteration is significantly better. I always like seeing Aframu, you know, perform well.
Our
him plus Johnson was, yep, we're doing really well. I am a little bit still worried for Jose. I think he does a little bit of kind of greed and a little bit more selfish jungle style than some of the other LCS junglers. So I'm a little bit cautious to see how that actually works out. Maybe with more time with the team, you know, and more trust in your teammates, you get a bit more, you know, focused on building up some of the teammates, and some of the greed plays goes away. But I don't think, you know, they're rocketing up to superstar level for any of the teams, but it is an improvement over last year.
I feel a little maybe more on the negative end than you guys. Like, you know, he got solo killed by Ryoma. No disrespect to Ryoma. He's one of the best Academy mids. But, like, if the whole point of bringing over Tokui is that he's better than the options were here, and maybe he can continue to develop. Like, I haven't seen anything that makes me think he's significantly better than a bunch of the players waiting in the wings already in North America yet. It's only one weekend. So, like, I don't want to be like, this is my stamped label of him. But I just mean, like, week one was, like, fine. It wasn't particularly impressive to me.
I think it is fair to put a premium on import slots too. So I agree.
Yeah. So like FlyQuest as a whole, Afro looks like an incredible pickup. I thought that was the case already. I think he was a big part of their two wins that they did end up getting, like with the bar game and even the 100 Thieves one, some of the shot calling and stuff I thought was decent. And there's still an identity that this team can work. Like Jose might be greedier, but like maybe that's fine if Tokoi's willing to give him resources and they're, you know, Afro's working with him. Like, I can see the team still working out, but I don't think the concerns fans had for FlyQuest were necessarily gone, quite like I feel like EG fans can breathe a sigh of relief. Well, I saw week one, I'm ready to be like, they're legit. Like, I don't know about FlyQuest yet.
I guess maybe.
I think that's not fair to put, like, you know,
I'm saying
similar perspectives
expectations.
On, oh, EG and FlyQuest. Yeah. I know you're not, but like,
I'm just saying,
you use that as the example. You're like,
I'm saying, like, bro, you got solo killed by Ryoma in an academy. Yeah. You could have just picked up Ryoma looked good this weekend.
Yeah,
like Ryoma actually looked good this weekend.
So I will say, if like, yeah, there's one moment where he gets solo killed, right? You're kind of hyper focusing on that.
Well,
I guess.
I'm bringing it up as an example, but I don't think either the first two games were good.
It's just to be clear, maybe my expectations for them were lower than yours. Expectations versus reality. I did not think that they would be able to compete with top five teams, just like point blank period, right? Yeah. And the fact that they actually beat 100 Thieves and it wasn't like a Fiesta game where they got five random kills and then ran over, like. They played the map. They played around objectives intelligently.
Yeah.
They actually just beat 100 Thieves in a real game. And yes, it was Tenacity, and yes, it was just one game. But for me, that was the like cause for cautious optimism. I still don't think that they're going to be a top five team. I don't think that any of the bottom five teams are likely to really challenge at the top. But if they can be competitive and take games, that's exciting for me.
Yeah, that was my thing. It's like the doo-doo level at the bottom from summer, the 9-10, FlyQuest and CLG. FlyQuest only got two more wins than CLG from last year in summer. So as much as everyone's completely willing, and it's like, whenever you say, oh yes, you know, 10th and 10th for CLG, you have zero expectations, you know, good job, gold star, for basically accomplishing anything. Good job, you wrote your name on the test. I'm just barely one step up from that from FlyQuest as far as my expectations. So I was like, oh my God.
Step up from writing.
Not only
name.
Did they write their names on it, but like they filled the whole thing out. Okay. So you're going to get some answers, right?
Ah, oh God. All right. So from my perspective, like I'm trying to judge each like roster move and decision kind of on its own, right? And like Afro is really good. He's almost never below. Like eighth for that example, right? Like just picking up Afro Moon to me is enough of a pickup that like you're probably not 10th or 9th or any of these like the worst team in the league. And that's why I'm trying to judge each component, not just like, this team's going to be able to be fun to watch. I thought that would always be the case with Afro and like pairing up with Johnson again and stuff like that. Like, so I'm trying to separate each individual roster move right now and be like, which ones are panning out so far.
So if this was already kind of to your expectation, then like what was the roster that kind of surprised for negative or positive?
I have to think about that. I think, okay, so we talked to Fudge Mid a little bit. I have been pleasantly surprised to see him playing the meta out the gate right away and been okay. Not the hardest test so far, but good.
Yeah. He spoke to it too. He was like, yeah, I don't have a super deep champion pool right now. That's why I'm just playing Victor. Good job. that's one of those ones where you know your own limitations and you're working around them. Victor right now, insanely powerful, also not super complicated. So you know, I like that focus from them. One thing I want to, if you want to, you know, broach the subject of Cloud9, I think the clarity around all their movements with the players and the coaching staff is this was not LS's Cloud9 yet. They were very clear, you know, he's still in Korea. This was Max Waldo's Cloud9. And LS even recently commented that he wouldn't draft exactly the same as their games here.
Game two draft in particular. Yeah, I'm like, that's not an LS draft.
He did say, you know, some of the parts they ended up with good teams, but, you know, some of the order he would shift around. I'm sure that each individual game is different, but there is kind of that separation. So we're still going to see a lot more change with Cloud9 because they still haven't, you know, fully built the church, I guess, or fully, you know, imported the whole thing.
Yeah. They're still waiting to fill out.
There's a lot of parts that obviously, you know, that are still going to move around. But as far as Cloud9, I wasn't as surprised by Cloud9 doing well. I was surprised that they did, you know, that well. And I was like, oh, you know what? Great. We were kind of on the fence. Oh, man, Fudge instantly lane swapping to mid lane. How is it going to turn out? I think definitely double thumbs up for me. I was actually more surprised, and probably you were not nearly as surprised as me, because I think we had, again, different expectations going in. I had higher expectations for Immortals. I actually did.
Oh, yeah.
I actually did, because I was thinking, heading into lock-in, and we talked about it on the holiday episode, I was one of the, I was one of the proponents.
You were on the FlyQuest.
You were like, oh man, they're going for the old CLG style. And I was like, no way, man.
They're going for FlyQuest.
Exactly. And they got revenge, you know, and they're building them up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and especially because part of my reasoning was that this is lock-in tournament and you're going to have a higher baseline, I felt like, with these players. And so I was, that's actually my most surprising. My answer for the most surprising thing was the Immortals flop. I was sad. And following up, talking to some players during and after the lock-in tournament that are not on Immortals, they also were rating this team, even before some of the stage games, as being extremely low. So it seems like it's not an aberration that we saw them kind of flop like this. And it's, you know, they have to work on it.
I'm glad we're having this debate because it was actually one of the Twitter questions this week that we pulled from Shome. I think I'm saying that right. Shome NL. It's just, is IMT the new CLG? And it feels like you were trying to say no, and you were too.
You guys were both positive.
Was
about
I?
Them. Yeah.
Mark's jumping ship.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, this fucking Kobe guy.
I don't remember, honestly. I swear, you're probably right.
Mark backed me.
I don't know what comes out of my mouth.
I remember because you backed me up. You came in all hot, and he was like, yeah, you know, they're trying to be FlyQuest, Dale.
Yeah, they got PoE internal. They're going to be FlyQuest.
I felt good. I was like, Mark's at my back, you know, reaching over.
He's hyping
getting
you up.
That's about a warning.
Like, yeah, let's
you
get
should,
him.
You should have seen me in your corner been like,
oh, I want to get
wait a minute.
Yeah. That's the moment I should have realized.
Because
am I the one that's wrong?
my issue was just, I mean, this feels a little bit weird to say, I guess, but it's just like fundamentally with how you're building a roster like this. I just kind of feel like if you're building a roster and you're filling it with veterans, you should be pushing for worlds, right? And that's just kind of how I look at it. And you can totally disagree with that just like fundamentally, but let me finish. But it's one of those things where it's like, I just never saw this team as competing at the top, even on what I considered to be like, oh, things are going well. And so for me, the high is not that high. And the low is you're literally CLG and you're just like hard 10th and it's an absolute disaster. And week one, yeah, it looks way more like CLG than the back-to-back FlyQuest Moneyball team that made finals, right? I was just so disappointed with how they played as a team because the teamwork was like non-existent. It seemed like they were completely on different pages. It didn't seem like they had a really clear plan of how to play out the game, of how to work together. Like there was nothing that really stood out as looking great to me. Even Power of Evil, who's usually like Mr. Consistent, I didn't even think he looked that good individually. So I was really disappointed watching this team. It's a rough start, man. And that's one of those things where I was kind of like more in your court with the high floor, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, you're going to start out at a pretty darn good level compared to where you will get, right? And the fact that they start out looking really bad and that I've also heard they're also bad in scrims is really concerning.
It is concerning. And
is there a butt coming?
I'm going to take that take that L on that prediction. I will say that I still theoretically, you know, the idea of adding experience to putting a lot of effort into Revenge and investing really heavily in him as, you know, this Immortals franchise player, North American talent, really trying to build up is a good plan.
Mm.
But I gotta admit, yeah, it's a bad step when you come out of the gate looking like this. Obviously, this is lock-in, just like every other single team here. This team is also now going to have a necessary, you know, similar improvement path where there's a lot of things to fix up. But it's kind of a hitch that we expected a little bit of a higher
start. And to be fair, last lock-in tournament, Dignitas went 10th. Ninth or 10th? Like they were one of the teams that didn't even get out.
Still the very beginning.
And then in spring, they were 4th, 5th. Yep. So like, I don't want to write the death knell on Immortals quite yet, but it was a big old flop for
week. But we got to get the views, Mark. Death notes to everyone. You fail in 1, 2, or 3 single games early on in lock-in tournament.
Even one?
I will say their matchup versus TL is a lot more interesting after Revenge and Gilhoto flamed each other the whole time. And you get the PoE versus Bjergsen rivalry. So at least there's a juicy matchup waiting for them, even though they're already knocked out.
Give us some of the juice from the flame, because like many, we don't watch Hotline League.
Don't support Travis.
I mean, I kind of already told you. It's mostly just like Revenge called in. He was kind of flaming Whippo's Scion build. And then Andre Gilhota was flaming just working with Revenge last year and how much he had to roast him all the time. And like, he was like, I can't hear you from the bottom of Group B. You know, they were, he had some good ones. Gilhota was pretty funny. So they're just going back and forth at it.
Yeah.
That is really funny. To jump back a little bit to Cloud9, yeah, I'm very happy with that, with how Fudge has been playing. The biggest surprise for me on Cloud9 was actually Darshan. Because I actually thought Darshan had a great week. He played.
Let's go, big belly man, Gragas.
He's never dying,
dancing on him.
What about the auction, huh?
Yeah.
That was okay. Yeah. He was there. He was in that game.
Sorry.
But the tank games were good,
yeah,
right? He actually, he played his role really well. Yeah, because to your point, I think it was you, maybe both of you said this, but the idea of like, yeah, are you that?
We're just the same now. Look what happened, Mark.
Are you surprised about Blaver doing well? No, not really. Oh, there's a big sub in the bot lane. Well, Sven, you know, like there's like Fudge was a question mark for me. I was really excited to see him play. I thought he looked really good. And then Darshan coming in, I was like, well, this could be a weak spot. But he had a couple of really strong tank games and looked solid. And I think that I saw a lot of people talking about, wow, like, hey, Darshan's kind of still got it. Like, you know, because I think people haven't really, if you don't follow Academy, you haven't seen Darshan play in a long time.
He's been one of the best top laners for years there now.
Yep. Yeah. And so I think this kind of gave a lot of people a new kind of perspective on Darshan, and that like, hey, like some respect for him. It's like, this guy has been around from the very beginning and here he is and he's still playing at a high level.
And he's been working really hard on it. I talked about this a little bit on the cast, but yeah, Darshan is... Not only is he,
good,
you know, president of president of the Players Association and puts a lot of work in there, but he is constantly, and even streams a lot sometimes, his VOD reviews and just examining the game and approaching it. And this is very difficult to do as someone who's played the game since the very beginning, since release. Continue to keep that drive and focus on improvement and on studying the game. Mm-hmm. It is very easy and actually not very fruitful to just brain off spam games and say, oh yeah, you know, I'm playing a bunch of games, but really approaching it with a growth mindset and trying to have, you know, goals and specific things to improve on. And he does that very clearly. And if you, you know, ever listen to him or talk to him in person or on his streams, he approaches it very methodically from a place of growth. So really wanted to shout that out for him, because I love seeing hard work rewarded, especially with, and of course I'm biased also because I know all these players, but some of the older players that have been around for a long time and still kept up the grind and still kept working at it. So definitely super happy for him, as he's saying.
He's a really good attitude too.
Yeah.
Just a genuinely super nice guy.
He's been putting in so much work. So happy to see that get rewarded. Also, he's always been a crazy tank player. He was
Poppy.
CLG, yep, exactly. True. CLG at MSI, his Poppy was a huge part of it. And, you know, the versatility in the tank play. So
I think for C9, if you look at this lineup, and it was their actual LCS lineup, it would maybe be in that, like, is it top five or not conversation. Like, Sven is legitimately...
I think it would easily be top five with this.
Yeah, like, Sven is legitimately really good, obviously. Like, yep. The fact that he's not starting is not an indictment on him at all. Fudge was the question. Okay, he looks good so far, at least against kind of
Blaver.
A lot of the people he's playing. I mean, maybe he'll struggle against Abba, Bjergsen, and whoever else. Yeah, PoE or something. But at least right now, he seems fine. Darshan can play his role in a team. Blaber's good. Like, this could just be this lineup itself, one of the top five teams in the league, potentially.
Yeah, we were joking because I think, like, Freak glossed over and kind of included Cloud9 in the group of teams with a bunch of subs. And yeah. I was like, who's the imposter among these teams with a bunch of subs? Oh, my goodness. The team that's subbing in Sven, this young, crazy, where'd that substitute AD carry come from? And Darshan?
Who? MSI finalist, top lane sub.
And so you're like, ah. So, yes, they are subbing in two players. And legitimately, the lane swap for mid, like, that is just, you know, one of the pieces that is, you know, very comparable to a lot of these other changes and, you know, has very high, versatility there. But you're like, okay.
Yeah. Like, TSM, collectively, those players probably have, like, half as many games as Darshan has played.
Yep.
Oh, God.
He was
professional games. Yeah.
I got the stats. It was 10th most of players all time for games in LCS.
Yeah.
So 10th most games. I can't remember exactly how many it was.
Most of those guys
lot.
Have never played an LCS game. I don't know how many, like, Proven Grounds games they have. But I'm saying if you took, like, every competitive game they played, all five, compared together, it's still going to be less than Sven and Darshan individually. So, like, some of these players are very raw compared to the C9 guys.
Absolutely.
Anyways, to answer the original question on budget,
I don't remember it either.
Well, we were going kind of by judging specific players that were highlighted for each team. You know, we went JoJo pretty hard, that type of stuff, you know, FlyQuest. But we are also looking pretty heavily at Fudge because that was the big question mark for.
Good question, me.
I don't even know if you actually did. I just gave you
credit
because
it was a good job, Mark.
I don't think you actually.
I don't think I did either. But great question.
But you know what? I'm giving you credit anyways.
I was the one who was like, I'm trying to judge the movie.
No, Kobe and I have decided.
I said that. I remember now.
Yeah, but you forgot.
Because I told him he had a great cast on the weekend. He's like, you know what? I'll throw Isaac a bone here.
It's also because Mark had my back last time and completely forgot. He even gave the argument on my side.
He turned on
so
you.
So I don't trust him.
Yeah, he's shifty.
He'll abandon you. You know, no loyalty here. Those marks, they ain't loyal.
Too much he's Mark ain't loyal.
My alliances? No, I don't believe, no.
But I would give Fudge a above the curve.
A gold star.
Definitely above the curve. Is that a steal from I Will Dominate?
Yeah. it's a gold star.
I'll give smiley faces. I'm giving him 2 smiley faces. What's the max number of smiley faces, you ask? Well, yeah, I'm not going
to
tell.
That remains to be seen.
Next time you cast and someone has a good game, I want on the screen to draw what their smiley face
is. I drew a smiley face at Worlds one time.
I remember that. You just got to start being like, for this game, Fudge gets 3 smileys.
I'm bringing it back. Anyways, I thought Fudge played pretty well. You know, obviously he even talked about himself just playing a bunch of Victor there. So,
and he ranked himself. I know it was interesting. He did an interview. I can't remember if this was like day one of lock-in or right before, where he was like, I had myself as a bottom 3, but just in this last week, I improved so much. Now I think I'm not a top 3, but I think I'm basically in the middle.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, that's pretty damn fast improvement. But also, I watched him play. I could see you in the middle right now. Like, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah. Also, there was the big story of, oh my God, he's so fast at getting his mythic because he was running Futures Market and he was also buying the cheapest mythics available, either AP or lethality.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's going to be super fast, but that's one of the big things that the Cloud9 and overall, you know, coaching staff hyper focus on are those timings on getting the timing out of the power. So.
I don't know.
I don't know. For people
video,
who don't
you got
know,
deliverables.
Yeah, for people who don't know the meme, they had the deliverable on Microsoft data, which a bunch of companies are trying to do, you know, data deliverables here. And I need to see some actual innovative data collection because it's the same old collecting CSDs and KDAs and stuff like that. There has not been a real innovation.
I mean, they could have done a way better question than that if they spent 2 seconds thinking about it.
Yeah. And it's also funny because right before, and I'm assuming they filmed these very much separately, they have Max and they're like, Max, talk about data and how, you know, interesting it is. And he's like, oh yeah, these specific, you know, pieces of data and these stats really show.
Like how our support is up on CSC.
And then I feel like they did him dirty. They cut from him talking about, you know, how we're going to use this data
CSD,
so well. And then they put up
all the
CSD
same stat
for supports. And I'm like, oh man, that's messed up. There's no way he would.
All right, so we got a question about this exact thing from Casey Chambers. He says, ignoring the C9 aisle CSD memes, what are the metrics we should use to evaluate performance, especially at support or jungle, that play the game in different ways than laners?
Support's tough. I'll be honest. As someone who loves a lot of stats, I haven't found many support stats that I honestly believe in. Jungle, I have a lot more. I care about what?
Nothing. I was going to try and tack some stuff onto support first, but
you can try. Like, I'd love to hear it.
Finish the jungle one. We'll retcon.
We'll circle back.
Yeah.
For jungle, I highly value kills and assists at 15 because that's how proactive you are. First blood percent, I honestly care a lot less about than kills and assists at 15. Mm. I care about 4%, which is not really like directly a good thing. But it tells me about your play style and what you're trying to do, especially when I combine it with your team's draft strategy. If you have a lot of winning lanes and you have an aggressive, scrappy jungler and your 4% is like bottom half in the league, I'm like, what are you doing? You should be able to invade. You should be able to make plays. You should be able to do this kind of stuff. And so I often use stats not just directly as good, bad, but to inform me when I look at your gameplay, like what should you be doing? And so objective control, if you have winning bot lanes, I want you to have good dragon rates. Like, so for jungler, I feel like a lot of the stats, as long as you're using them intelligently, actually are usable.
That's the key. The problem with stats is always the interpretation. It is always on the person using the stats. It's unless the stat is literally wrong, which has been the case in some some points of data, it's almost always about how this person is using or interpreting these stats and chalking up and actually jumping steps and saying that this correlation is caused by this.
Yep.
And that's where a lot of the errors come from. Because like you can say, yes, there's a correlation between whatever stats or this stat. But when you get to the point where this stat means X, I think a lot of people have failed in that area. So to your point about using those stats to inform what you already think about this and looking at the games to try and back up that argument is the key there.
CSD, for example, for a Karthus player in the jungle versus a Trundle, I don't know.
And you combine CSD with things like kill participation, you know, the overall teams, not only K plus A, but also compositions that they like to run, late game, early game, that type of stuff, to evaluate if they're doing well at this strategy. Because even right now, there are always heated arguments between professional junglers on both sides of the herbivore, carnivore styles. And it's always a debate, especially whenever they make changes to the jungle. What is this constant value system that you're balancing as a jungler in your head for every second of the game? Am I going for ganks and supporting up these laners? What type of champion am I picking for hard carrying, you know, controlling objectives, vision, all these different things? That's what I love so much about jungle. It's always about balancing every second of your time. One of the things I really like as far as actual stats, since we're trying to get concrete stats out there to inform that, is jungle proximity, which is really hard to find on a lot of sites. We have it for our internal. I had heard that there were some other ones that were getting it for external as well for public, but that's one of the first ones that I always look to, because if you have a very clear trend for a jungler, abnormal jungle proximity towards the bottom lane, it's just so easy, you know, to classify this team, and you talk about the individual players or how they like to play and which area of the map they gravitate towards a lot. That's what people study when they're studying opposing junglers and trying to attack, you know, if they repeat the same route, if they always gank towards bottom lane first, or, you know, these types of things. Those are what you look for. As far as trying to circle back on the support one,
just punt. Let me get in there, Kobe.
Go ahead.
For support, I do think there are a few that are at least interesting. Of course, it's still highly contextual. But forward percentage, I think, is interesting. Duo procs, I think, is actually a good stat.
Yeah, that one's good, actually.
To inform play style. Right? You know, is this someone who's like hugging their AD and actually playing heavily for 2v2? You know, do they have really high jungle proc, like, or dual procs with their jungler? Like, are they moving around the map and playing for that? And I would say forward percentage can be pretty interesting as well. Like, that can be interesting if you're playing, like, winning lanes. Of course, it's, again, all support stats are going to be super contextual. But if you're playing winning 2v2s and you have really high forward percentage, that generally means you're playing it aggressively. And, like, on their side of the map, that can be interesting. And I think KP can be kind of interesting, too. It's pretty champion-based. You know, if you're playing an Enchanter, it's obviously really easy to get super high KP. But a lot of teams, you can kind of infer, like, who is starting out the fights based on, like, oh, okay, Aframu or whatever often on a lot of his teams has very high kill percentage because this is like a player who is actually making the calls and starting the fights for the team.
Vision is one that people often try to point to for support, but it's actually a situation where the more you win, the lower your vision score is. Teams place more wards from behind than ahead because teams ahead protect their wards. Teams behind have to throw them in and get them clear to try and fight into the vision. And so,
and your wards spot less people when you're on the pushing side, so you don't get vision score for that.
Right, exactly. So it's actually funny where people try and be like, look how many vision wards this guy's buying. And I'm like, he's losing. That's why it's the highest in the league or something. So that's one where support stats can be misleading. I do like the ones you brought up. And so jungle, the reason I like some of theirs, like the kills and assists one, you can look historically to like get different reads. Like, okay, this is a slow meta. Let me look at other splits with slow metas. And there's actually a couple breakpoints that you can, kind of like how for a running back, if anyone follows American football, like you want to get over 4 yards a carry. Like that's just a good number. A good number for kills and assists at 15, is 2. Like you should be above 2 if you're playing jungle well, honestly. There's not many times where you can look at players, look at their season average and say they had a good split and the numbers below that. There's actually very few times, and I did this, I went back historically and looked, like, when have people been under 2 kills and assists at 15 and they had a good split? And I'm like, I actually can't find many examples.
You kept on going so long, I forgot what my
really
good point was. we'll just sum it up with, again, most of the error, if not all, comes down to the person utilizing those statistics. For supports as well. That's why, especially too, since the questioner's around, you know, like judging good players, I always think that when teams or broadcasts are trying to like hype up a player, yeah, it is cool to post, you know, leading X stat in X category, followed up by an actual play that gives a visual to the point you're trying to make.
Yeah.
You know, because that gives it the context. All of these,
it's like show Isles like farming perfectly under
the car. Exactly.
You think we're just memeing the CSD? Look at this.
Look at this perfect farm. Where's his AD? Nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Because that's what people blindly will follow. Because, you know, like your point about the vision, even with supports, you know, people are like, vision, good, yes. So then you're like, high vision score, that must mean good. But you have to think about it intelligently, and even sometimes those numbers can be gamed. Zombie ward, or are you just placing the wards without thinking about where you need the vision? That's why you need an actual clip setting up. Look at this. Perfect timing here, 45 seconds before objective. They have all their control wards previously up on the top side of the map because they just make a play here. They recall, they get their control wards. They're now placing them down on dragon because they're going for a dragon play. This type of stuff, where you're getting your vision matters. Also, the numbers are going to get funky now too with the fart drake, are we calling it officially?
I call it the LA smog dragon.
The chemtech, basically, yeah. Because it's going to warp vision numbers with control wards. You have to buy more of that type of stuff. So there's all types of nuances that basically blindly following stats is.
What's funny is people are like, this is why. Noobs.
But there are some cool ones.
Yeah, that's why people are like, oh, I don't know, the stats are bad in League. I'm like, no, this one makes stats awesome.
People are bad.
Yeah, it's like, this is what makes it fun to talk about stats in League versus like.
Well, and coming from some games that like had no stats that were really accessible at all, it's really cool how in-depth it is in League compared to coming from like StarCraft and stuff. There's like post-game score.
APM. Whatever.
Yeah, like APM is so, oh my God, that would tilt me so bad. Yeah. There was a Protoss player, I can't remember if he was Swedish or anyway, he was European Protoss player, Elfie, who had like 80 APM or 60 APM or something. And but he just didn't spam click at all, right? And people are like, he's so bad. I have so much more APM. And he actually won tournaments. It's like, well, he just doesn't spam. And then people would be like, I have 800 APM, but I'm stuck in silver. I don't get it. It's like, well, you're literally, there's no possible way you're being anywhere close to efficient with your APM. Yeah. But anyway,
that's a tilter back
then. It's cool to see like how much we really do have in League. And it does allow you to deep dive. And things I always love stats the most for is I watch the games, I create, you know, some sort of hypothesis based on the games. I'm like, I feel like this guy's actually, you know, spending so much time away from his bot laner. Well, what's his duo procs? Like being able to kind of confirm things that you already feel is where stats, I think, are the most useful and most effective in storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just always asks your question, why, you know, what is the cause of this? Because that's where we laugh the most is when, you know, people are just blindly pointing to numbers.
All right. So 100 Thieves. Expectations very, very high for them coming into lock-in, obviously. The prediction graphic that we had, what was it? 90% of us or something predicted them to win.
One person had EG versus TL. That's the only person that didn't have 100 Thieves in the finals. Everyone else had 100 Thieves versus one of those two. Yeah. So literally everyone voted for those three teams in some way. Mm-hmm. And one person, which I can't even remember now, was EG versus TL.
I think Jet had TL, but I can't remember if he was EG versus TL.
Oh, yeah, I claimed him for being a homer.
TL. Yeah. But either way, basically everyone had really high expectations for 100 Thieves. And out of those predictions, the vast majority predicted 100 Thieves not only to get to the final, but to win. Yeah. So, you know, how do we feel? I mean, for me, I'm not really worried too much about that one dropped game, especially because it was Tenacity, not Someday. And in the first two, they look super dominant. So, like, what's the report card?
Yeah, I do think Tenacity played just fine in that game, though. So, I'm not going to hang anything else on him. Maybe I have a little bit of trepidation for a slowish start from Abadaga because I have pretty high expectations for him.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit maybe of a slow start there. There were some mistakes as far as kind of team decisions, and we don't know where the communication was on taking some of these fights for them. But there are definitely pieces to clean up for sure. both with, you know, some team play, some individual plays. I think where a lot of people's reasoning came from, which is hard to argue against for those placements, is that this is the roster that is returning. Everybody else made these big changes that you can't guarantee are going to have instant success. This is literally a full returning roster that played together all of last year and won the LCS.
And the medicine
so
for them.
If whoever the person who left them out, if they're trying to be hipster and argue against pre-lock-in expectations of 100 Thieves being up there, I think that is extremely...
Yeah, I mean, they lost that game. And I'll have some thoughts on that. But, like, they also... almost perfect game, their first game against the TSM.
The
TSM
level Academy, one invade first blood on Sunday, and then perfect game from then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the Golden Guardians, again, you can't help who you're playing against, but like they played against Golden Guardians. They got Kate Lux, and they just slammed the game, as you would expect, giving that to FBI. And then the game that they lost, I think was a trap game, honestly, the way that they approached it. They didn't, they like mostly sat in lane, didn't farm. They got counter picks on both solo lanes. And I went back and I rewatched this in depth. They never placed a deep ward in the first 17 minutes of the game. With closers Viego and two winning side lanes or solo lanes. I'm like, how do you not just like get vision? They just, I like watching that game, I can totally see a world where they just were like, we'll beat them. And they just didn't seem to be too engaged and actually be proactive. Yeah. I would be pretty confident being like, that was a trap game. And that sucks to watch one of your top teams take it easy, but I don't judge that too hard.
Yeah. I will say I didn't think Tenacity had a very good game. I mean, he did fine. He got those couple kills on that one blue side fight, but that was a fight where it was like, I was kind of critical of the fight even when I was casting, where I was like, oh, I don't even think you should have been going for it, where they had the first two dragons and they spent all their cooldowns and then couldn't fight for third dragon because they had no cooldowns. But even after that, he never was really able to find a good angle to get an ult, right? Like, he was always getting zoned out of fights or get a one-man ult on Kennen, these types of things. And it's like, if you're going to pick Kennen into Gwen, you get so hard outscaled. Like, you will never win in the side lane past, like, one item unless you're way ahead, right? And he did okay in the early laning phase. It was fine, but it was, like, seemed pretty even. But you just weren't able to find those angles. And that's where it's always like, but like, what if someday? Because you can't know, right? It's one of those questions where you just don't know. It's purely hypothetical. Because if someday found, you know, the perfect flank and gets a five-man ult, that can just win you the game on Kennen. And that's one of those things we obviously never really got to see. I thought he was fine, but it's like hard to really take too much from it because he did an okay laning phase and then couldn't find any ults in team fights. And it was like, okay, you were there. But I do think it's one of those things where I would have liked to see him kind of really throw down the gauntlet and be confident to take like an aggressive pick into it, something that could actually beat the
Gwen in the
side lane. I really wanted the Jax or Fiora something like that. Jax, Fiora, you know, even things like Kale scale really well into it. And I know in competitive, everyone's scared to play Kale. Kale's really good in solo queue right now, but that one I was less expecting. But obviously, put that as a mark against him because we don't know who called for the pick. Right?
Yeah, maybe he was like, give me Kale. And everyone was like, lol. Keck W.
It's going to be Kennen.
Yeah.
So that's not a mark against him. But I just felt like I watched that game and I didn't learn anything about Tenacity as far as how he's going to do at the LCS level. So that was my only disappointment from that. I hope we're going to see more of him because I want to get more of an impression, you know, of him as a player and like how he's going to perform on the stage in an intense game.
Yeah, and I know that they at 100 Thieves also want to learn more, you know, of how he's going to perform on stage. So I expect there to be more performances from him in lock-in specifically, and because they're trying to build him up. Very clearly, if they're going for must-win games, it's going to be the same roster that won LCS. And so it's going to be this constant work in progress with him. So I would say, starts out fine. For him. And I think I still expect 100 Thieves to make their way at least top three. I feel like top three feels pretty clear already after week one. People were a little bit off, I think, with not putting Cloud9 as high as possibly they were supposed to be. But like those top four, them with EG, Team Liquid, 100 Thieves.
If they don't finish above Cloud9, I think that's a huge failure.
So I think those four rotating is the jumble.
Big agree. All right. We have one more day of best of ones before the best of three quarterfinals. So we can't really predict the best of three matchups. not real. I mean, you could speculate, but not worth it. But is there any final games of the final day that you're looking forward to?
100 Thieves, Cloud 9.
Yeah, that one's gonna be a really good one. That one's definitely the best one of the day. I don't think it's particularly close because we get to see Cloud 9 really kind of challenged against a top team. I do think, especially if 100 Thieves was like, oops, we didn't take that last one serious, this is going to be the next game. This is going to be one that they are prepared for, that they do take serious. It's a really good test for Fudge as well, going up against Abadaga. Can you actually exploit Fudge? If you think that he has champion pool weaknesses, can you just take away the victor or ban the victor and kind of put him in an awkward position? This, I think, is going to be answering a lot of the questions I have about Fudge and also about 100 Thieves form.
I big agree. I already mentioned the Mortals TL for the earlier reasons. I'm going to throw out one more, the Dignitas games, because Blue was someone who was super criticized coming in. His first game was a bit of a stinker, and already in the Reddit thread, someone was like, he's going to be the most criticized player this split, and like, there's already flame coming his way. The next game, he like tore a fingernail off. He was...
The Baron Steel?
Yeah, and then he won the game. The Zoe was good the whole time. Mm-hmm. There were some mistakes, but like it was a pretty good Zoe game. And then the Baron Steel to top it off with a messed up finger. And then suddenly in the Reddit threads, everyone's like, Blue will never be criticized the rest of the season. So like, I just want to see more of him and see like where he's actually landing.
Yeah, I mean, clearly I think it was exaggerated how bad he is, right? People are being pretty ridiculous, I think, about it. You know, we talked about this in the holiday episode, but... You know, speaking to some of the coaches and everything, he had a lot of health problems that he was dealing with last year. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be healthy now, and
then he ripped his fingernail off.
What were they doing? Oh, man. Did we ever get confirmation with the exercise, like as a warm up exercise?
Oh, I didn't hear. I didn't hear any details. I just heard that he got torn off.
Yeah, it was like they were doing warm up exercises, like sticking their fingernails in grates and trying to like, I don't know what they were like
torturing each other.
Yeah, like taking out my fingernail off, dude.
If you can take the pain of your fingernail being tore out, you can take the pain of your jungler inting double buffs to your mid laner.
If you can't take this, they had like the bamboo under the fingernail thing, you know, like that form of torture. Like, if you can't take this, you won't be able to take Reddit.
Oh my God, man. But the Zoe Baron Steel, I think, was probably the coolest play from Lock-In so far. Because that was, it was not even just that he had good timing on it. It was that he did it from so far range. He did Paddle Star R, and then got the max R distance, and then still had to flash in to extend the Paddle Star even further.
Well, and the guy
time with his smite.
The guy body blocked the Paddle Star too. Like, the other team played well. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he got it with the smite.
Yeah, it was just the smite. And then I messed up because I said that the Zoe was a higher level, and I forgot that they...
It's just always 900. Yeah, once you transfer. But
10 years of looking at that after a smite steal, it was hard to unlearn. I can tell you, it's hard to drop that.
Well, it's also weird with Spellbook because if you do it before the first two changes, then it's the 450 one.
Yeah.
You have to change twice and then it's 900.
Oh, I didn't know it worked like that.
Yeah. But you're never going to see a Baron steal attempt with the 450 because you'll always have changed spells twice
by
that point. So it will be a 900.
Yeah.
But if there's something super
like
early on,
or something,
yeah, exactly. Then
that's
maybe.
Interesting. Didn't know that. I don't play a lot of Spellbook. I pretty much only play Spellbook on like...
Yeah. I play zero Spellbook because I'm a jungler.
Yeah.
So. But he has to have all his excuses ready. Like if he gets Smite stolen on. You have to know Smite mechanics.
It was funny because when Azale was starting talking, he was like, that was the most impressive play of the weekend. I was immediately thinking like, am I just a bitter jungler that I was like, screw that, stupid ass Zoe just flashes in and steals it. It's my big deal.
You are. Yeah, you are.
And I was like, I came to that conclusion. I was like, I'm not going to say anything.
It saved the game. It won
old man, yelled the cloud.
You keep going. I was like, yes, I'm self-aware that is just salty jungler attitude. And I'm going
to... No, I'm right with you. I feel that every single time anything is stolen from me, I'm like, they're not good. That was lucky.
Stupid ass.
I mean, even if it Zoe was luck, broken. At least in terms of importance, it was one of the more important.
Yeah, that's what I literally went over what my possible retort is gonna be in my head, and I was just like, nope, not gonna say it, because I was gonna be like, well, that was actually a really lucky play that had you know, disproportionately large impact on the game, so it seemed like a really... And I was like, nope, I just won't.
Yep. Well, it should be really fun. Dignitas, you know, they still have a lot to be seen because they played the least games. They only played two games. So they play both CLG as well as EG. So chance to make a splash there. Should be really exciting. That's obviously Friday. Kicks off 2:30 p.m. PST, assuming it's the same time as last week. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I am wrong. We also got a letter here. We're trying to do a little bit different. We got a letter asking for some advice. So if you guys have letters.
Is this a physical letter? Do we know how this was delivered?
Yep.
Yeah, it says, Dear the Dive Crew at the top, and they signed it. So.
Exactly. So it's clearly a physical letter. And you can send us letters about Well, through Twitter probably, or actually Anchor would work the best with us.
Yeah.
So if you have a question, you can send us questions about more than just league, and maybe we'll actually answer them. Maybe
love life
advice. Love life. Advice column.
This dude watches so many psychology videos. He's got an opinion about it, I bet.
Yep. All right. Well, here's the first one. Dear the Dive Crew, big fan of the show. Hope the new year is treating y'all well. I've jungled for about 4 years of playing league, and I'm looking for a fresh start by learning mid lane, but I'm having trouble. I'm trying to pick a mid laner to one trick as I learn the role. I most recently climbed with Zin and Rek'Sai and the occasional Lilia. Any advice for someone who hasn't hit minions in 4 years? Thanks for your advice, jungler looking to lane.
Well, I use mid lane as my autofill, and as much as a meme as it is with, you know, LS followers for Annie is very mechanically easy to pick up and roams very heavily. Is a good play style for junglers playing mid lane. So that is a good one. But my personal advice and my new queen of autofill is Vex. I love Vex. She is so easy to pick up and I feel like has a bigger impact than Annie. There are more cool plays that you can pull off. All of her spells are really wide, so your AoE is really easy to hit. And there are a couple of new nuances where there's a bit higher of a skill curve learning this champion than Annie, so you'll also feel a bit more rewarded. But it's still important for roam timings. Mm-hmm. It also gives you a lot of satisfaction as far as being a big part of the engage for your team or knowing when to peel for your super fed AD carry, which is very important right now. Jinxes and Aphelios and Caitlyn's all running around. So I highly recommend those two champions. I would say if you want to be, you know, go a little bit further out and be cooler and feel cooler.
No, we don't want our autofill to be cool.
No.
I want my autofill to play something boring, high skill floor.
This person's not autofill. Wait, they're trying to become a mid laner.
That's true.
Let me tack on some actual strategies besides just the players. Okay, fine. I'll just give bullet points then. The work on your CS, harassing your opponent when they're going for their CS, and your roam timings. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, those are good things for mid laners to work on. I would say, as a different direction, the current meta aside, because it's very control mage oriented right now, I think a great champion for people to learn mid lane on is actually Ahri. It's extremely safe in lane. It is somewhat skill shot dependent, but you need to learn skill shots to be a mid laner.
Rank 1, legit Korea, Ahri main.
There you go. It's still strong. It's not like it's trash. It's just like it falls in and out of favor in the current meta a little bit based off itemization. But it's always usually fine. You can pick it into a lot of things. It has some bad matchups that it's like not the safest thing in the whole universe. But I feel like it teaches you a lot of the fundamentals well. You can kind of play team fights front to back. You can kind of look for pickoffs. You can do a lot of different things with Ahri. And it's just like a generally used champion.
Yeah,
Vex better.
For me, I'll give my easy answer and my hard answer. If you want an easy champion to just climb on, or I think Malzahar has been just generically good for so long.
And in solo queue, people mess up all the time.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where people always talk about, if I'm coming from jungler support, it's so hard to CS. Malzahar, in the early levels, that's the only time you really have to worry about CS. Once you have like a lost chapter, you just press E and you press W and your Voidlings kill the whole wave for you. You queue the backline. It's very, very simple. And you always have value because it's so easy to say, hey, jungler, I'm 6 now. Come here. I'm going to ult him. Pretty much always get a kill. You want to respond to that before I go to my hard option?
Yeah, I was just going to say part of the reason behind my answers was I was focusing on this is not someone who is just looking for an easy auto
one trick.
Yeah, it's not someone that's looking for an easy autofill.
Yep.
There's someone that actually wants to change roles and learn.
Yep.
So that's why I emphasized, you know, the CSing harassment in lane and working on the roam timings and your vision coverage for either side of the river, because it's how to play mid lane rather than
that's much more advanced. Yeah.
I feel like Malzahar doesn't help you in that way.
He's great at roams. That's not true.
I feel like Malzahar is a good stopgap, but won't give you as good growth opportunity.
He has no skill shots.
That's why
his Q is technically a skill shot, but you have no like.
That's why I'm giving the other option here, Zilean, which I actually think Zilean has been really strong, kind of sleeper in solo queue for a long time. He is hard to play though. The early laning phase is genuinely difficult. Like his CSing is really
that auto attack.
Watch some Bjergs and Vods.
The auto attack is horrible, but. If you put in some games on Zilean and you actually get comfortable in the laning phase to where you can survive some of these more difficult matchups, this champion scales so incredibly well. it to the point where if anyone is doing okay on my team and is playing a scaling champion, I basically feel like we won the game. Like, I've played probably even some games with you on, when I was playing Zillion and stuff, where it's like Kobe's playing something that dives in, and it just feels like, all right, well, Kobe's just going to 1v9 this game now. All I need to do is speed him up, throw a bomb on his head, ult him. This champion has so much value, and especially in a hard carry meta where there is a lot of Aphelios and Jinx, and there's lots of diving junglers, like maybe you have a Zen or a Viego. You just need something like that, that they're going to make use of that speed and is incredibly valuable. And yeah, definitely, I think Zillion is one of the strongest champions in the game right now, if you can really suffer through learning the laning phase, because laning phase is hard.
That's I just reminded myself of something when I was talking about you should look at Bjergsen VODs for learning Zillion. That is just a blanket statement. You should start by watching VODs. Don't, yeah, as much confidence as I have in you and just learn by doing and just playing some
and
mid
it's
lane.
Not a lot. He's only got a little.
You're going to save a lot of time. This game has been out for so long that if you don't start by watching VODs of the best players and just getting so much of those learnings there, you're gonna waste a lot of time grinding away,
especially for one tricks, because he mentioned finding a one trick. Anytime I want to learn a new champion, I go find the highest rated one tricks and I see if they stream or I watch their OPGG replays and things like that. There's so many little tricks that you can learn that are just so beneficial. You know, like when I first started playing Kled, the first thing I instantly learned watching the first VOD was you don't level your W until you dismount, and then you can get it. The first one is basically an on-demand remount. Something like that you might not think about or figure out until you put in a lot of games, but like these little things, you just like that.
And a lot of times your build paths and rune choices and all these things will change matchup to matchup. And when you look at a guide for a generic champion, they're just going to throw whatever advice at you. But when you watch a one trick or people who have been through these matchups, you're like, how do I survive Zed versus Ahri when I'm the Ahri? You know, like, okay, here's this person. Here's what they're building. Here's what they're doing differently in the lane and how they're pulling the lane or something. You know, like, these are all little tricks you're going to learn. If you're actually trying to one trick, it's way better to do.
I've also found a lot of the one trick streamers are really responsive to questions, because a lot of them are like somewhat smaller communities and like that's their niche. So like you can go in and you'll find like, you know, the Kled one trick I would always watch is like Soul Mario. And, you know, he's a really high rated challenger. And you can go in there and ask people questions about matchups and stuff. And often you have a much better chance than if you like go to a Bjergsen stream. You're probably not going to get an answer because there's 20,000 people in the chats going like this.
Where's
right?
your donos at?
Yeah. So I do think that can be pretty cool as well. All right. That'll do it for this episode of The Dive. Remember, send us your questions on anchor.fm if you want to get a little answer there. But if you are on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of The Dive when we return. We'll be back, obviously, coming out on Wednesdays, I believe, is going to be our regular time in the evening. But
we're
now,
recording them. Are we always getting them out tonight?
Maybe I trolled. Maybe it's Thursday morning.
Up for
still.
Debate.
It is Thursday morning still, is what it actually has been. So ignore me. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm. Submit your questions. We love them on Twitter. We love them on Anchor.fm. LCS Lock-in continues Friday at 2:30 p.m. PST sharp, following the LCS waiting room. Game one, Ding Toss Bottom Pay versus CLG. I'll be there. You better be too.
Watch this or that as well. About to go record that now.
True.
Boom. It sure took a downhill turn after I left.
Yeah, after last week.
Yeah.
That quality, you know.